Welcome to Jawa Jabber, a Star Wars podcast dedicated to spreading our own little slice of positivity throughout the galaxy. From the prequels to the sequels to every Disney Plus spinoff they want to throw at us, we're here to celebrate any time we get to spend in our favorite galaxy together, and we want you to come along for the ride. I'm David Wren, joined by my bro hosts Dennis, Kyle, and Matt. We invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy our fully armed and operational podcast.
And this is Jawa Jabber.
Hello there, and welcome to an all-new episode. Yeah, we took a little break for a little bit, but we're back and we've got tons of content coming your way in the next few weeks, leading all up to the premiere of Ahsoka on Disney Plus on August 23rd. Unfortunately, Dennis the Phantom Menace couldn't join us this evening, but the rest of the gang's all here. I'm, of course, your host, David Wren, and joining me this evening is Matt, the Radar Technician.
I'm Matt, the Radar Technician, and I'm looking forward to having some real fine talk with some real fine folks, especially with a really special one today. So I'm geeked.
Exactly. And Kenobi.
Hello there.
All right, so tonight we're doing something a little different that Matt kind of alluded to, and we are really excited about it. So I'm going to metaphorically pass the mic over to you, Kyle, so you can introduce our very special guest for this episode.
Well, hello there again. Today we're going to interview my dear friend, Alec. Alec is an award-winning sound designer who's worked on some of your favorite films, especially in the Marvel Universe. He's worked on Across the Spider-Verse, which was recently released, Into the Spider-Verse, 22 Jump Street, Sausage Party, Spider-Man Far From Home, and many others. Alec, welcome to the group, man. We're excited to have you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on board.
Yeah, so Alec and I met probably 6 years ago, I think. We bonded over sneakers on Twitter, of all things. And we've been like internet besties ever since. Alec, you want to introduce yourself to the group?
Yeah. My name's Alec Rube. Like Kyle said, I am a kind of like recovering sneakerhead, but I do for work. I'm primarily a film sound designer and editor. And then I do some TV work as well. But yeah, just a good old friend of Kyle, general nerd. Heard he had a fun Star Wars podcast. I've been super into that whole sci-fi Star Wars world for since birth, basically. So it just felt like kind of the right
thing
to do.
That's awesome. Yeah, we're happy to have you. And you know, so in the tradition, since you are on our podcast, I think we have to give you a Star Wars nickname. I don't know. What do you guys think? I think we got to give him like a Star Wars nickname to kind of go with ours.
If we can think of one.
So, Alec, what do you think? Like, sorry to put you on the spot, but like, what do you think? Like, if you could nickname yourself kind of using Alec as a, you know, jumping off point, what would you, I don't know, like, how would you name yourself in our little group here?
I think the layup is just probably Sir Alec Guinness, right?
There you go. All right. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I love that.
I think I like just Sir Alec. So for the rest of this podcast, I'm gonna refer to you as Sir Alec.
I like it.
let's do it, man.
I like it, Sir Alec. I'll throw the Guinness in there, Sir Alec Guinness. Why not? I love it.
That's beautiful. So I guess for the audience, we're gonna break this interview up into just two segments. We want to talk about filmmaking, which is something that, I mean, we're all extremely passionate about here. We make sure that anytime we cover an episode or a movie, we give a shout out to some of the department heads, because the crew often goes unnoticed, and man, they're just the passionate people behind the things we all love. So and then after that, we'll talk about Star Wars. So Alec, what led you down this career path in sound designing and mixing and editing? And then would you say you have any inspirations in that realm?
Yeah, I guess what kind of got my start was like, as like early as I can remember, like when I was really young, like probably like maybe around 5 or 6, I got put into, like, you know, doing piano and stuff. My parents were really, like, adamant about me, like, getting into music and stuff, especially because it's kind of like, they say it's like a foreign language, right? So the earlier you start with it, like, the easier it is down the road. So everything kind of, like, kind of started there, like, with music. And, you know, kind of, like, a lot of my early memories of, like, just kind of, like, media in general is, like, sort of surrounding music, you know? Like, whether it's, like, movies or video games or just, like, hearing commercials with me. Like, you know, just, like, that was, I feel like, kind of what, like, activated my kind of active listening or, like, hearing, you know? And then as it kind of progressed, like, I started playing in, like, a lot of bands and just sort of kind of being, like, interested in, like, things that make sound. And, like, I got really, really into recording and then, like, how to, like, accurately record, you know, like, drums and guitars and stuff. Because, like, you'll hear them, like, one way in real life, and then getting them to actually sound that way on recordings is, like, pretty tough. So that's kind of where it started for me, for sure, was, like, just music and recording and having my dad, who's, like, in that world and is in the industry as well. Like, it was great, you know, like, because he didn't ever push it on me. But anytime I got interested, he kind of just, like, wanted to give me the keys. If it was just, like, helping me get some software or, like, you know, some basics about, you know, like, recording. There's, like, one day he literally, like, threw a manual to like, recording at me. So it's, like, you know, like, he didn't, like, force me to do it. Because, you know, especially, like, as guys, like, we know, like, if our parents, like, push something on us, you know, we'll, like, totally want to do the opposite. And yeah, so exactly. I think him just sort of, like, kind of giving me some pointers but without, like, getting too into it, you know, kind of helped me just naturally just keep wanting to follow that rabbit hole, which will just sound in general lead you to so many different things, if that's, like, recording music or recording, you know, out in the field, like, the sounds of literal things, like recording cars or airplanes or guns or whatever, and then getting into, like, music mixing, which might take you to film mixing, you know. They're so interconnected. So
that's really cool.
I love that.
That's awesome. And I'm insanely jealous because I have always wanted to learn how to play the piano. And I think you're right that the earlier you do it, the easier off you are. Because a couple years ago, I tried to pick it up and it wasn't happening.
Yeah, it's hard for sure. Yeah. You know, they call it like a practice for a reason, right? Because you just got to, like, spend all this time. But when you're a kid, man, you're just like, total sponge, just ready to, and you know, those little early days of just learning scales and stuff translated into, like, my primary instrument, which ended up being guitar and stuff, which led to being able to, like, have an easier time reading music. And then when I first started, like, college, that was my first kind of pursuit, was going into, like, whether it was, like, just studying music or music production and stuff like that. So it definitely was a really, really early help for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was very insightful. And as a father of a young kid, later on, I think I'll come back to this, but that was super helpful. And I really appreciate you throwing all the advice out there. So,
oh yeah, man, shout out parents.
So looking back, like, back also to when you were a kid, do you is there, like, one film or TV show that you, like, you know, grew up watching or saw when you were younger that really kind of, like, kickstarted you or motivated you to, like, want to get involved in this career path or just totally, like, kickstarted your love of film, like, filmmaking and film and movies in general, I guess?
Yeah. Early as a kid, I was always, like, really into, like, space and stuff, which I'm sure a lot of you guys were, being Star Wars fans. So, like,
I was never into it.
Yeah. It's like, kind of like a bridge into just overall, like, kind of being obsessed with, like, science fiction and stuff. And so, like, you know, there's, like, a kind of deep cut, like, my hipster pick is, like, I love, and I still love this movie, even though it's not the greatest, but I love this movie called Titan A.E. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that movie.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
It's great, man. I mean, it is. You know, it's like,
I agree.
It totally single-handedly like demolished the Fox animation team or whatever. it's so bad, but like, like when I was a kid, man.
I mean, like,
yeah.
Come on, there were a few that did it.
There's a couple of
it wasn't just Titan AE. Come on, and
yeah.
out of all of them, Titan AE was like the better one. You know, like.
For sure.
Know, it wasn't perfect, but it was great.
Yeah, it's got Matt Damon in it, man. Come on.
But, exactly. You can't go wrong. Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, that kind of ended up like things like that. Like, and like my wife and I totally bond over. We're like mega hipsters because our favorite Disney movie is Treasure Planet, you know? So like.
Yes.
I love that. Oh my God. I love that.
Another fantastic underrated movie. My sister and I were just talking about that the other day. We're trying to get my nephew to watch it because we kind of think he'll be into it. He just turned 8, and
that movie is magical, man. Like
it's so good, and it's so underrated.
Ties into like that was like a kind of turned some lights on for me like really early because that movie is like. Not even in the sound design sense, but just like kind of, like I said, kind of like active listening, like that sound. There's like a Goo Goo Dolls song in that movie that they just like, to me, like as a kid, like there's something like that's what it's all about, man. It's like just, especially when you work in on things that are for kids or for like young adults, like it's about like kind of inspiring them and like creating something like memorable for them, right? So I saw that movie like in theaters and I was just remember being a kid, like, that song came on and they're like surfing through the clouds and stuff. And I was just this, like, you know, people joke around now, but like me as a kid, if I knew the terms, I'd be like, this is cinema, you know? Like,
right. That's awesome.
So for early stuff, it was that stuff for sure. And then it kind of like a lot of stuff is, you know, later on kind of like taking on the similar things. Like my favorite movies of today are like Alien and Blade Runner and stuff like that. So I've kind of always kept my head in the clouds looking at the future or sci-fi, just any of that stuff in general.
There is nothing wrong with heads in the cloud, man. Nothing wrong at all. All right, great. So how about the relationship between someone in your position and then like the other department leads, like a sound mixer or a visual effects, character design, like those type of people? Like how do the relationship between you and them kind of work?
Yeah. So, you know, when it comes to like mixing, like we're very, very involved with them because like, you know, if we don't, you know, edit and design, they have nothing to mix. And then if we have no mixer, there's no way to kind of like help us bring it all the way to the finish line. So there's like kind of a symbiotic relationship, or at least I think there should be between like both sound design and basically the what we'd call like the edit team and the mixing side of it, because like, you know, if we're all like on the same page, like you can help make some really, really cool things happen, you know. And just like, you know, as far as like just knowing like the overall like what the filmmakers are trying to achieve, because like at the end of the day it's like we're making their movie, you know. So like knowing like designing with the mix in mind and then mixing with the design in mind, like there can be a lot of like really, there's like a, it's a recipe for some really cool stuff to happen. But when it comes to like other departments, you know, like when it comes, you know, like if it's like VFX or stuff like that, we're not too involved with them other than like we want to understand their timeline. And you know, I feel like these days, like it just keeps getting like, you know, there's a lot more crunch. So like just understanding where they're at in their production process and when we'll be taking like delivery of shots and stuff. Cause we'll be working like sometimes, you know, like if you get, you know, on the film really early, you might be working on a lot of storyboards, you know, and stuff like that. And then, you know, understanding when like, oh yeah, like we reached out to them and yeah, that stuff you've been working on, that's all going to be, you know, it's going to be pouring down rain. But you're not going to get that to like the very end. So just like do all that, like, you know, if you're going to shoot Foley, like keep that in mind, make sure all those footsteps are nice and wet, you know, because it's going to be totally, totally, you know, like moody and rainy and that whole time. But the what you might be looking at right then is like sunny, you know, because it's just like not that you're not into that far into the process for that kind of stuff. So
that's what I think, like, the general audience misinterprets filmmaking, that they think everything is so linear, like you get from the script to storyboards to sound design and mixing and then to VFX. Like, they're, Alec, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys are working on things oftentimes throughout the entire process. I mean, especially given that's the kind of leads into our next question about the range of involvement from different directors. But I mean, they could bring you in on the sound design process extremely early, or you can be working on things, like you mentioned, up until the last minute before it's sent to theaters.
Yeah, or you're doing both. So yeah, it depends on the project and the creatives, right? Like, and just the source material, you know, like if you're working on like a live action, kind of what we'd call them in our business, like a walkie-talkie, which might be just kind of like a rom-com or something like that, you know, like you might be
I like that walkie-talkie. Yeah. I love it
because they're mostly just walking and talking, and they talk while they walk.
Absolutely. We have the same type of stuff in theater, you know. We just call them, like, you know, oh, this is just a two-head scene, you know, like you're sitting there, you know. Yep. and you're doing monologues and stuff, you know. Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, so on a movie like that, you might be, you know, like, it might be a lot more relaxed, and, like, the plan, you know, as Kyle mentioned, might be really linear, you know, just because of the material. But then working on a movie like, you know, like Spider-Verse, like, you know, there's no shortage of material online, so I don't need to harp on the creative process, like, and how that affected schedules and timelines and stuff. But what I will say on that, though, is working with a team like that, it's like a privilege, I feel like, to be part of something like that, you know, the entire time is going towards, like, in my opinion, greatness, you know. So like when you're on like a tougher schedule, or you're getting late, like some later deliveries, I don't even want to speak and say late deliveries because that's not my department, but when it feels like we're getting stuff late in the game, like, you kind of have to just, like I said, like, kind of smell the roses around you, you know, and just go like, yeah, there's never been something made like this before. So of course the deadline would kind of end up messed up, you know? So it, like Kyle said, I, you know, something I feel like that can be adopted, or at least like understood by maybe the general public, is that, like, there's no single way you skin this cat, man. Like, every single film is bespoke for a reason, you know, and that can affect release dates, and that can affect, you know, like, the, you know, when you see something like in theaters that, like, appears to be maybe like an error, or like something that could have been better, like, these people, like, have dedicated years and years and years of their lives to this thing. Right. So it's never like they wanted to leave that on the table, you know, like, there's a lot of external or internal reasons why things happen the way they do.
Oh, sure.
And they always say a movie is never finished, it's just released.
Mm-hmm. It's only abandoned. Yeah.
Yeah, man, 100%. Yep. That's the movie I just worked on. That's the poster child of that, for sure.
I gotta,
man,
say, though, I gotta say, like, though, man, that, like,
I just worked on one of those.
Like, with Spider-Verse, though, I don't know if it's just the current climate of social media and how all these, like, TikTok kids just think they're cinema buffs, but I've never seen a movie in this day and age that has so much information about the behind-the-scenes process. Like, there's a lot of crew members that came forward about the movie and the time crunch and things like that after its release.
Yeah, I think it's just like, and I mean this positively, and some people might mean this negatively, but I just feel like that movie is very, like, polarizing, you know, like, and when you work on something that gets people talking, you know, like, it can oftentimes, you know, like, especially in today's world, like, you can kind of create your own following, you know, so, like, some people might just want to, like, you know, I kind of felt this way after the first one, like, it was like, yeah, I just finished that thing, you know, like, and when I say finish it, I mean, like, my time on it was done. Like we said, the movie's never done when it comes to the creatives, you know? So it's like, I think there might be just some, like, sense of accomplishment. Like, yeah, man, like, look, go check that thing out. You know, like, that's what I've been working on for 3 years, or, you know, for some of those, like, heads of animation or like look development people or that stuff, like they've been on that for since the first one came out. So I think there might be some of that in there too. And I can't necessarily speak for the people who kind of come off more negative about it, but I think it's just like I said, when something's polarizing, right? They you want to talk about it, you want to share your opinion, you know, and it might be a bit, you know, as not a TikTok kid, it might be a like a fun thing to talk about. Maybe that's their treasure planet, you know. So,
I remember you were when we were talking 2018 before Into the Spider-Verse release. You were texting me, you're like, Kyle, I'm telling you, this movie is a banger. Like, it gives the original Spider-Man 1 and 2 a run for its money. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, my friend worked on it, but like, there's no way. And then I went to see it opening night because of you. Like, I plan on seeing it anyway, but I went specifically opening night because you worked on it and texted you after. And I was like, oh my God, this might be the best Spider-Man movie of all time. And then Across the Spider-Verse came out. And it just upped the ante that much more. Like, there's, I think, unequivocally, Across the Spider-Verse is by far the best Spider-Man movie. I mean, through and through, it just elevates so many other characters besides Miles. And I think that's something that a lot of superhero movies struggle to do these days.
Yeah, it's, yeah, thinking back to that first one, that one's my personal favorite, but I think I just enjoy some of, like, the set pieces and origin stories are fun when they're done right, you know? So it's like, I love just like the real like Brooklyn life aspect of Miles and kind of like, you know, getting to see, like, we've seen so many origin stories. And so I think like getting to, I feel like probably see one of the best ones like ever told, like for, you know, comic book heroes and stuff, like that one will just like always have a really special place in my heart. But getting to work on the second one, it kind of like definitely felt like a, like it was transcending, you know, like it started some things in the first one and then it understood the assignment, you know, it had to like really go 100%. So hard for it to feel like it was doing something substantial, since the first one people like or kind of regard it, you know, and it's very beloved to them, you know, so.
Absolutely.
So we'll move on to our next question, which is obviously the Spider-Verse movies were very dear to you. And I've got to say, like, my son loves them. So later I'm going to thank you on his behalf because they have been incredible. But other than the Spider-Verse movies, what is there a dream project that you would love to work on, if you could think of one, from your childhood or even as you've grown to an adult, you know, as your passion and loves have evolved, you know, is there a dream project you would love to work on and a certain director that you would love to work with?
Yeah, totally. So growing up, of course, like, you know, I was in that perfect age range for Spider-Man. So being able to work on three Spider-Man projects now, is a total dream come true. But like, if we're kind of getting greedy, right? Like, one of my total favorite things, just like in life in general, I'm like, as a kid, I fell in love with like Gundam and like Japanese mecha, you know, and all that stuff.
Okay. So like, nice.
When it kind of got brought into the mainstream through kind of like, and I say this like lightly because the mecha community will totally come for me. But like when they brought in like movies like Pacific Rim and Transformers, you know, that was like a lot, some people's like kind of first, you know, like exposition to that stuff. So if I ever got to work on like a Gundam thing, that's like my, like, I don't think it'll ever happen. So I dream about it, but something like a little bit more attainable, as in like, they're making the movies here. So the chance of me working on it is higher, is like, if I got to work on something like, you know, Godzilla or Alien IP related, because those movies to me are like super, super gnarly sound movies, you know? Gnarly, of course, in like a good way. So like being able to do anything with like something as iconic as like, you know, Godzilla or like the Xenomorph or something like that, as far as like some crazy stuff. You know, I heard there's like rumors of a Spawn movie coming. Who's like, that's like my favorite comic book hero. So getting to work on that would be really cool. And then for directors, like any director, just getting being able to learn from them, and you know, if they're cool, like it's always like a privilege for sure. But like growing up, like I loved, like I kind of, like I said, I feel like I was in like a good time frame to like love those like James Wan horror movies. So if I got to do something with him, would be really cool. Or of course, like
he's doing so much. He's
all over the place. So working with him would be really cool. And then I got to work for like a day on this Netflix project. He came in for a day on it with Sam Raimi. So getting to work with him in like a large capacity. And the guy, the director of that movie was super, super cool too. Like I loved working for him as this guy, David Yarovesky. He was like really passionate, and I feel like I learned a ton from him. But like that day that we got to work with Sam, he came in just for a short time and just kind of gave some notes. It was like the crazy like info dump sage guy showed up and was just like, "You're looking at it red when it should be blue." Like, that's not what he said, but it was just like totally going like, "Oh yeah, this dude is totally changing like my entire thought process about this scene right now." So getting to do an entire movie with him, I think would be something like really, really cool. So
that'd be awesome, man. I just got through rewatching all the new MonsterVerse movies, and I was thinking watching them, getting to work on Godzilla or any of those other monsters like Mothra, that would be my dream. Getting to make unique sounds for Mothra. I mean, she's such a unique creature. And James Wan, I mean, the dude's really expanding his horizons with his genre. I mean, he's doing Aquaman, he did Jurassic World. In addition to horror, I mean, that would be an honor.
For sure. I think he's one of his earlier steps into like less genre-y. I think he did I'm pretty sure he did a Fast and the Furious movie. I think he did like Fast 8 or something like that. So
yeah,
like his like versatility is crazy, man. Like he made like, you know, like all kinds of like crazy horror flicks and stuff, and then he like did a movie with The Rock. So like that dude will have some you know, some nuggets to learn from for sure, you know. So that would be really cool.
Absolutely. So our next question, I was really curious if you could take us behind the curtain on creating sounds that are familiar with audiences already. So you created all the Thwip noises for Across the Spider-Verse. What is it like making those sounds that are new for the movie but are already very recognizable for the audience?
Yeah, that's a great question for sure. So like, luckily for me, like I got to work really close with like, you know, some people I worked with and even worked under on the first film, you know, and then kind of on this film, being able to like take a stronger role in the design. And so being able to bounce ideas off of them, specifically these two guys named Kip Smedley, who was another sound designer on the film. And then kind of the veteran sound designer on the film is a guy I've gotten to work with a lot, named John Pospisil. He did sound design for like RoboCop, you know, as a name drop.
Oh, nice.
So like Starship Troopers, stuff like that. So like, first off, being able to work with those guys and be bouncing off ideas with those guys is like the coolest thing ever, because they're really cool guys. They're really smart. And like, it's different, like getting different, you know, opinions on something when it comes to things like Thwips, right? Like it's a kind of like one of the, like, I don't want to say iconic, but like important sounds, you know. So when we were gonna do like a redesign for Miles, that started with, you know, Chris and Phil and the directing team. Like it was a point they wanted to make, like, okay, in this movie Miles is older. That's a story point. Like, time has gone by. He's had more time as Spider-Man. We want that to be reflected like in the sound design for him. So it was like, we had a really, really cool sound from the first movie, and they just wanted something different. And as they kind of were just like describing it, like aged up, you know, like beefier, you know, and kind of just like, you know, like, oh, like, you know, it to reflect like his experience now. So at first you of course want to look at like any time that sound has existed before. So I'll never not hear the Raimi flips in my head, you know, like,
right,
those kind of like kind of cool organic like zuzzy, like, as we'll call it, like, you know, kind of like swishy stuff, like that's always going to be imprinted in my head. But you know, on something like that, like, we'll definitely want to start with like, because that thing doesn't exist in our world, right? Like, people don't go out and web swing through the city. So, like, usually, you know,
wouldn't that be phenomenal, though? Like, wouldn't that be really cool?
The world would be so much better for it.
I would love going to work that way every morning, you know, like 5 o'clock in the morning, just zooming around town. Like, that'd be great. It'd be awesome.
And then you get in like a web crash, and then there's like web traffic, you know.
Oh,
like,
that'd be terrible, though. No. See, at 5 o'clock when I'm heading to work, it's really not that bad. So I think I'll be all right.
If you're chilling. But yeah, so something that like a lot of the veteran guys have taught me over the years is like, when you're going to make something that doesn't exist, you have to try to create the basis of it with things that do exist. So our brains and, you know, our belief can continue to be suspended, because it'll like, we'll buy into it easier. So when we did the first movie, we did like a lot of recordings of like airsoft guns and stuff like that. Cause we kind of imagined like, what's like a mechanical, you know, is it air powered? Like we don't, you know, off the top of my head, I couldn't break down a web shooter, like how Peter and Miles make them, but I assume it's got some kind of like air pressure release system. So we did a lot of recording with that kind of stuff. So when we made this new stuff, I started with some of those elements. And you kind of need some of those things that remind you of what it, why it was special. So, you know, finding out what those sounds are, like, you know, like if you're working on like making a thwip, it might be like, how does the web sound when it's flying through the air? And then how does it sound when it's hitting the wall that it just got shot to? And what does it sound like when the web is stretching? And then you kind of make maybe some of those mental lists, and then you kind of go through like older material and like see how that was done before, and then maybe see how you can, I never want to say things like do it better, because all of this stuff is like totally icing on the cake, you know, anytime you get to do it, but maybe right. Just do it the way that you want to do it, right? So that's kind of the long-winded process. Into it.
Exactly.
I love right. That, man. I know. One of my favorite parts about filmmaking is how do things that aren't human interact in a human environment? And I think it's a toss-up between lighting and sound design that I just love so much in the filmmaking process. Like you said, how does it sound when the web is traveling through the air when it hits a wall? I mean, that process, it just, I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah, and then it's also about like doing the things that don't exist to also, because like, you know, especially sci-fi, comic books, all that stuff, like, you know, like you do get to have fun with it. And I feel like if you take it too literal, like you can take some of that fun out of it. So like adding that really cool, like when I made the Miles Whip, I found some recordings of like weird, like silenced, like SWAT, like weapons and stuff. And so I kind of like pitched them down and slowed them down so you could hear like the mechanics like working, you know, like in slow motion. So it wasn't just like a gunshot. It was like a mechanical kind of explosion thing. And then when you kind of brought that down to size and into level, like you went, oh, hey, there's like a kind of cool, like detailed level, like in there for his thwip now, where it didn't sound like that before. So just kind of like experimenting and knowing when to go big and when to have fun. Like, you know, if you were trying to do sound for a fight scene and you only put the sound of punches, you'd be like, this sounds lame and this sounds like a student film, you know, like shout out student films. But like then when you add all those whooshes and like, you know, the dialogue of the efforts of grunting and the footsteps, and then oh, now we're playing it like through the reverb so it sounds like it's in a room, and oh man, like you start really going and trying to take it to the next level, that's when it gets when it gets crazy, where if you saw that in real life, two people fighting, like, it would just sound like clothes moving around and then slaps, you know, like that doesn't sound like a movie. So
that's why we don't do a lot of fighting in real life, because it doesn't sound cool, you know, like people have to make movies about it.
The only reason.
Exactly. Matt, you wanted to mention Lincoln, right?
Yeah, so I brought up Lincoln earlier and his love for the Spider-Verse, but on behalf of Lincoln, who is our kind of blind podcast member, Link Skywalker, he's my 9-year-old son who's on the autism spectrum, but Lincoln is awesome. a huge movie buff and was never a Spider-Man fan, and then somehow became obsessed with Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And I didn't take him to see it, that one in theaters, but he fell in love with the movie and we watched it over and over again. And then of course, when Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse came out, we went and saw it in theaters. And he, you know, he's never been like, he's a huge animated movie fan. So when I showed him your list of past work on IMDb, he loved that you had done Hotel Transylvania movies and some of the other animated stuff you did. He thought it was pretty cool, but he like really latched on to Spider-Man, and he has no Spider-Man background. And I thought it was really beautiful because he loves very well done animated movies, and he the things that he loves about him, I think, are the best things that like equate to movies. He loves the animation, the sounds, you know, the music, everything that I think kids on the autism spectrum, you know, like they either really love or they struggle with because they have sensory issues. So like, you know, either everything really hits really good or everything, you know, is could be kind of a thing. And it's interesting to me that he really loves Spider-Man and, you know, the Spider-Verse movies. And like he's got to the point where he's like he's obsessed with them, and he loves animated movies all around. He could tell you he's gotten so far into it with all the movies that he can tell you who everybody, every actor that voices every character.
He can tell you who voices. He will talk to you for hours about it.
Yes, he can tell you who voices every character. And so when I told him we were talking to you tonight, I asked him, I was like, would you like to ask him a question? He goes, he's like, I don't think I have any questions. He's like, but I really want to tell him that when I tried to describe what you do as your job to him, you know, he's 9 years old. So, you know, trying to describe what your job is to a 9-year old, you know, yeah. I told him, he creates the sounds of everything you see, you know, like, and even as an adult, I don't totally know what, like, I love movies, and Kyle is way better versed at this than I am, and David even too. I'm probably the least versed on this, because I even have questions for you. Like, I don't know how you work with, you know, like creating, like, I know you do the sound for like all the special effects and, you know, everything that happens, but how do you work with like the music and the soundtracks and all that kind of stuff? But so I'm kind of trying to explain this to him. He goes, just tell him that he made the best sounds for the kicks because the kicks were awesome.
No way.
And that's what he wanted to say. He said the kicks were great. And,
let's go, man. Good kicks. That's
you guys had great kicks.
Kit, man.
Keep doing what you're doing with the kicks, man.
Yeah, like I think that movie's got a really cool one where he flies in and kicks Miguel on the train, you know? Like, that was a moment, man. So, man, check him out, dude, for noticing the little things. You know, he's like, so did you like the portals or did you, you know, oh, no, I thought the cakes were great. So I love
that, that was the one thing he brought up. He's like, Dad, the sounds on the kicks are great. And I'm like, okay. I mean, for nine years old and, you know, he's.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He's super. That's awesome. You know, yeah.
I was going to say, that is a fantastic.
So thank you. A movie for him.
That is a fantastic thing for Lincoln to notice. I love it. It's amazing.
Yep.
I'm so glad he's so into it because, like, I try to always, like, keep this in mind when working on something like that. But it's like, that's who we're making the movie for. Anybody else, like, who gets to benefit and who gets to like it and all that stuff. But it's like, that, you know, it's for the kids, man. That's what it's all about. Kids should get to watch awesome movies made for them, and they should be able to, like, experience joy from movies, you know, just as we got to. Like, I like to selfishly think they made Spider-Man 1 for me, you know? It came out, like, day before my birthday and stuff. Like, they always kind of come out around my birthday because my birthday's in July. And so it's just, like, I used to think, like, man, almost every Spider-Man movie through the Andrew Garfield ones, we'd just go out on my birthday and go see it because they'd be out by then.
So, oh, that's awesome. But,
yeah, that's what it's all about, man. Totally.
I understand. I feel, even though I was in college at the time, I feel like they made Episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, just for me. Like, it was, like, my perfect Star Wars movie. So I get it. Yeah, I understand that feeling.
If you're not making something with, and I don't want to say it's for the fans, but with like the people who enjoy the product in mind, like, what are you doing it for? Like, go make your own movie.
Well, then. Right.
Like, when you work on an IP like Spider-Man or Star Wars or you name it, like, there's people who are, like, keeping the lights on of that franchise, you know? So, like, they shouldn't just be thrown to the wayside, you know?
Totally. Absolutely. So, since this is a Star Wars related podcast, sorry, Alec, you were not going to get out of here without answering some Star Wars questions. So,
no, I'd be bummed out if I didn't.
Fair enough. Good. All right. So, I'm going to start us off with a few Star Wars questions before we wrap it up for the night. So, I want to know, well, we want to know, who or what initially introduced you to Star Wars? Like, how did you get involved in the Star Wars universe?
I definitely gotta say, like, my parents are both, like, sci-fi fans. Like, I think my parents, like, one of the favorite movies they share together is Blade Runner, and so that bled into me, like, super strong. But then, like, my parents have been together, like, since, in, like, they were in, like, junior high. So, like, they went and saw Star Wars in theaters together. So, oh, like, when they had kids.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the dream come true. That's so not fair. Totally. But I'm so happy for your parents. Like, that's amazing.
They're the best, man. So
that's incredible.
I think since I've been sentient, there were just Star Wars VHSs in my house. And so I can't say if it was, like, my mom or my dad who bought them back then, but, like, also my sister, my oldest sister growing up, she was, like, you know, she's, like, in her, like, I think she's in, like, her mid-30s or, like, getting towards her late 30s, sorry, age reveal, but she was in that sort of, like, dry spell, right, of, like, you know, like, the 90s didn't have a ton of, like, as far as I remember, like, a lot of, you know, material, so she read all the, like, you know, like, EU books and all that stuff.
Yeah,
and she
just used to, like Matt was a big Legends. Well, now it's called Legends, but yeah, the Expanded Universe. Yeah, Matt. I mean, I read some, but I know Matt was really good or really big into the Expanded Universe.
So yeah, her reading that stuff, it was like me being a kid and, like, knowing about, like, Luke Conley and those guys just from the tapes, and then, like, her telling me, like, yeah, but then, like, years later, then there's, like, Ben Solo and stuff, and, like, she would, like, kind of, like, continue the fantastical, like, you know, your own headcanon of, like, wow, what did they do after that movie? Like, I just kind of, you kind of never stop thinking about it, right? So I definitely,
I understand never stopping thinking about it. Trust me.
Right.
So I guess
the original credit goes to my parents for buying the the VHS tapes, but like my sister and I were like really close growing up and stuff, and so it was just like, oh, we're home together, okay, like we're watching all the Star Wars we have in the house, like
that's really awesome.
Yeah, and just her, like, just, you know, she, like, I just kind of rolled with her. It's like whatever she was doing, I was doing. So it was just a lot of it was just like watching Star Wars. So
that's amazing. I love it.
I love that, man. That's bonding over something like that with your parents and also your siblings is just unparalleled. Like watching Star Wars with my brothers is some of my favorite memories. And the first one I ever watched was Empire Strikes Back with my dad on VHS. And I'll never forget that. So I guess back to filmmaking, are there any characters you've worked on or been adjacent to that were based on Star Wars characters? Like we all know Lord and Miller were supposed to work on Solo. I still think we got robbed of that experience. But have you worked on any characters that the director was like, hey, like I'm basing this off of this aspect from a Star Wars character?
I don't know if I've ever directly gotten to work on that. Like I got to work on like an animated Star Trek TV show, right? And like just working on, I feel like Star Wars has transcended science fiction, right? Like it's just everywhere. So I think like saying I got to work on anything, you know, when I haven't directly worked on it is kind of like, you know, like almost blasphemy, right? But like it's the sound design and the storytelling of Star Wars, it's just in everything, right? So it's like, you know, maybe you're working on a spaceship and it's not inherently, or you know, it's not even the villain ship, but like you're never gonna not hear a TIE fighter in your head, you know, you're never not gonna hear the Millennium Falcon hitting, you know, light speed, right? So it's just like all this stuff is gonna always be influencing you, and all those sounds are, whether you like them or not, I do, but if you like, whether your hot take, you know, maybe you're like, man, I hate all that stuff, but like you can't hate that it was iconic and original and unique, you know. So
that's why I love sci-fi so much. I mean, the two things that came to mind other than Star Wars when I was come up with these questions with everybody was like Blade Runner, so I'm glad you brought that up, and then Dune. Like those are just two huge movies that, like you said, like about Star Wars, just kind of transcended sci-fi, and I feel like Dune is starting to do that again, at least for this era of filmmaking. But I love how you could take a fantastical element and just make it so human at the same time.
That's like on like the sound nerd side of it, that's like one of my favorite sounding movies I've heard in a really long time. Like I know the team who mixed it, like, you know, everybody who worked on that movie is extremely talented, but even on the design side, like there's sounds that like I left, and I don't do that a lot because I try not to be like the industry professional. Like I just like having fun at the movies. Like, and I think that's important to hold on to when you work in the industry. Yep. It's 'cause like, and honestly, I think it's important to have for everybody these days, because I feel like we're kind of like in this like hyperbolic time chamber of opinions for movies, and I feel like it's kind of sucking the fun out of a lot of things, you know. So like when I went and saw Dune, like I just went and left it when like that movie was like fucking badass, man. Like that was just awesome. Like the sounds of the kind of like grasshopper helicopter things, like those were insane. And then the sound specifically of like their like kind of like overshield thing, like, you know, like I that sound like kept me up at night. Like I was like, that sounded so cool, how do they make that, you know? Like, and that's kind of, I feel like, what you dream about when you do this job, is just hoping you make something cool enough that somebody went and just thought about it later, you know. Maybe like I said, I kind of referenced earlier, like I think Titan AE kind of turned some lights on for me earlier. I think you just kind of hope you might do that for somebody down the road too.
Yeah, I love this, the sound when they're just dropping those missiles on their base at night, and the sounds of them getting through the barrier, and then the same kind of thing when they turn on their, I'm a huge Dooner, I can't remember the sound, but their shields, and then when the knife has to slowly pierce the shield, or their dart pierces the shield, it's just, it's awesome, man. I love it.
It's intense, man. It's really cool. So I'm glad you brought that movie up too, because I just feel like that movie, like, I and I'm not at all saying it came and went, because it didn't. It definitely like blew up, but it was just like, now we're getting hyped up for the second one already. But I'm like, hey, there was some really cool stuff that happened in that first one. I hope that people notice as well too. You know, it was just a fun time.
So what would you say is your favorite Star Wars trilogy or era?
Oh man, that's the question for the ages, right? man, well, let me say that I feel like there's no right or wrong answer to this question. But I think as when it comes to like the movies, I think the original trilogy is my favorite. I think I have the like a lot of the I feel like I watch those movies and I just go like, yeah, these are like solid movies. Like I like these. But I will say I like them all. I definitely have ones that are on like the bottom of the list, right? But it's a Star Wars movie at the end of the day, so I'm excited for it. But I would totally be like wrong to say that like the prequel trilogy, man, like that was my childhood. All the video games I played, all the books I read, the posters. I had the
yep.
Toys R Us Darth Maul lightsaber. Nice. Like,
uh-huh.
So it's like, like I think the original trilogy are my favorite movies, mm-hmm. and then that's the only thing else. Like everything else is like prequels of just like think my favorite things, like, you know, the like what Kyle started with, just the hello there meme. I mean, like, come on, man, you know, like there's these movies have like I guess just like they just took over, like, dude, how many hours I've played Battlefront. And you know, I just recently picked up a copy of Republic Commando for
nice.
Like a little throwback. Like I never got to play that game as a kid because I didn't have an Xbox. So like,
okay,
picked up that and like, you know, all the KOTOR stuff. Like, there's so much really cool like stuff about that era. So like, mm-hmm. if we're talking just about movies, then it's the, you know, the original trilogy. But like everything else, man, I just had so much fun being a Star Wars fan. Like I think I was like 6 when episode 1 came out.
Nice.
So like,
oh, so yeah, you were just like perfect. Yeah. That's fantastic.
It just defined my kid personality. It's like, yep, no, Jedi, cool. We're playing Jedi Recess every single day now, forever. It never stops, you know? Like, so
you were
it's always going to have such a special.
You were a prequel trilogy kid then. Like that was your
yep.
where what you grew up with. Okay.
Yeah, I was born in 95, so.
Okay, gotcha.
And I think episode 1 came out in like 99 or 2000 or something like
99,
that.
99,
so,
yep.
Yeah.
99, yeah.
I was in the seats as what, like probably like a 5-year-old or something, 4 or 5-year-old.
That's amazing.
And it was just because my parents, it was just like, you know, and then my parents are the classic, like they went and saw the original trilogy in theaters, so they're kind of the prequel haters, you know. So, yeah, but like, you know, they mean well. And
we're all about positivity on this podcast, but that gets a boo.
I know. Yeah, don't have them on.
we love the prequels here.
They're so fun, man. I know. It's like, it's a good time. It's Star Wars.
I mean,
man.
Anakin is my favorite Star Wars character. So, you know, of course I love 100%. The prequels, you know? Yeah.
The best, dude. The best.
Yeah. And Hayden Christensen is just the best also. So, yeah.
Totally.
So the question is, did they take you to see Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith in theaters? Or did you have to watch them at
yep,
home?
Every single one.
Oh, okay. Nope, every single okay. one. Good, good.
Great. That's great.
Yeah.
So and, they're you know, redeemed. We can only do a half boo then. All right.
I think I've seen every single Star Wars movie with them, like my parents.
That's so cool.
Yeah, they see everyone. Like we Force Awakens, we were there opening weekend. You know, I was like, you know, like cringing in the seat because I would say probably Last Jedi is one of my least favorite Star Wars movies, but. There's still some things I really like about it. And I was remember like, you know, my leaving with my mom and she's like, that one's really good. And I was like, crazy. I didn't really think that one. I didn't love that one first watch. She's like, well, we're going to have to go see it again then. You know? So like, they're like totally been like, you know, they're Star Wars nerds, man. They're the OGs too. So
that's awesome.
Like, I like how even when you've seen them all with them. I like how even when you don't love a Star Wars movie on the first watch, there's still things you enjoy with it. And that's mm-hmm. kind of, it's not like we have a blind love for it, but it's just so near and dear to our hearts. Like, I'm the same way. I mean, I enjoy the movies. I enjoy a lot of aspects of them. I don't love them as much as I love the ones that I grew up with and the ones my parents mm-hmm. grew up with. But at the end of the day, it's all Star Wars, and I'm still going to love it because of that.
Well, I just remember...
I feel like...
Go ahead, Alan.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
What I was just going to say, I remember with Rise of Skywalker, that was the first one that I had three different showings pre-ordered for opening weekend, including opening night. But like, I went again on Friday, and then I went again on Sunday, and I had those tickets like when the tickets went on sale. And some of my friends were like, but what if you don't like the movie? I'm like, well, it's Star Wars. I'm still going to say it, like, whatever. Like, you know, I'll have to try and find some redeemable qualities or, you know, whatever. but yeah, like that was the first one that I had blindly bought like multiple tickets for. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go see this three times on opening weekend.
That's cool. And that was kind of tying into like what I was going to say is I think like it's important like to just get to just be a fan of some stuff, you know. Like I remember one of my like earlier memories of people really hating on a movie was Crystal Skull for Indiana Jones. And I went and saw it in theaters, and I think you know, maybe this has just been my mentality for a while, but I was just like, I don't know, man, that I had a lot of fun. Did you see that part where you like jumped off the car over the cliff? Like, that part was crazy, right? And so like that's kind of my mindset for Star Wars, like, because I feel like, you know, when the sequel trilogy came out, that was like, you know, Reddit fan theory meltdown central, you know? And so like, I kind of just stopped caring about any of that online discourse and just thought about
right.
like, what I liked about it, you know? And like, then when I saw the kind of meltdown about, you know, Last Jedi, I just went like, you know, whether or not that was your favorite movie or not, I was like, dude, we get to see like a big budget Star Wars movie in theaters in like in the 2010s. Like,
right.
I'm kind of just cool with that.
Exactly.
I took that same mindset to another polarizing movie that came out recently with The Flash, you know, like,
oh, okay.
I went and saw that. And I was just like, unfortunately, it was just so everywhere. I could not hear so many opinions about it. And I was like, well, yeah. I'm going to go see the movie with some good people and just see what I thought. And I was like, that was a fun movie, man. That was a cool time. You know, bummer we're not going to get to see any more of this story. But like I said, I just try to stay in like a, you know, not, I don't ever want to be the industry guy who just like is way too opinionated about stuff. I'm like, it's the entertainment industry for a reason, you know? Like, and when it comes to Star Wars, I'm just like kind of cool with anything that comes out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And actually that leads us to our last Star Wars related question. What upcoming Star Wars project are you looking forward to the most, and why is it Ahsoka? No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly, man. so as like as a fellow Anakin stan, like, uh-huh. I'm always just super stoked about
Stanakin?
Dude,
yeah,
Stanakin, dude,
can we
100%.
Coin that term? Stanakin, you heard it here, yeah, on Jawa Jabber first. Stanakin,
yeah.
I love it. Yes. We're making t-shirts.
I'm super pumped for that because I love how her story intertwines with him. And I'm like just greedily hoping that there's any chance that there's like, it doesn't even need to be an awesome fight or anything, but just getting to cause Anakin's like the main character, basically the whole thing. Right. So seeing somebody mm-hmm. like, you know, the fallout of their relationship and how that led her down the path of, you know, where she went to is like always been like so like nerd obsession for me of like, what happened with that? Did they ever meet? Like, you know, like,
right,
I'm
right,
super
right,
excited
right.
for that. And I love, I'm blanking on her name right now, but I loved the actress who played her for the Mando episodes and stuff. So,
Rosario Dawson.
Like, yeah, I like her portrayal of her. So like, I'm excited just to see more of that and stuff. And the choreography for the, you know, episodes that had her were really cool. And I think that's important for like the whole dual lightsaber user thing. It's just like super mm-hmm. cool looking. So it's gotta be done right, you know? And then outside of that, they just, I think I heard like they announced like a some crazy like Star Wars RPG that's in development for the game side.
Okay.
I feel like I saw that recently, but I could be talking out of it.
Star Wars Outlaws, the one that has the new trailer.
Yeah, that one. So I'm pumped for that. That one sounds cool.
It's gonna be awesome. We're supposed to get a panel for it at San Diego Comic-Con. I'm excited about that game, and it takes place in between Empire and Return of the Jedi, which is a time frame we haven't really seen in recent Star Wars media. So
that panel should be safe too.
Star Wars games too. Yeah. I feel like they kind of get slept on sometimes for the story too. Like, I dream every day. Like, I guess I could say if I'm hopeful for anything upcoming, I'm hoping there's any kind of like film, TV, like representation for the KOTOR stuff. I feel like those stories are just waiting to be told, you know? So.
For sure. I think the comics and the video games like get slept on so hard because there's so much good content with both. Like when you talk about like Battlefront 2, I think it's Battlefront 2 and Aiden Verzio and Janina Gamvikar like portraying that character. Like that's a pretty cool character that has a strong actress that, you know, could be explored more. Then you've got obviously Cal Kestis and Cameron Monaghan that could take that character further. And then with like all the comics, like there's so many strong comic runs that have been going the last like 3 to 4 years. One being Kira and Amelia Clark, who we all know I'm a fan of. But like there's there's a lot of like, you know,
you're a fan of Matt.
Fan of. But there's a lot of characters from this back other stuff that could be explored way more, and maybe they're holding it in the back pocket. I don't know, or maybe they'll, you know, who knows what we'll do with them. But I guess we'll see.
I forgot to say too. I totally would be like hating on myself if I didn't say one of my favorite things that's come out recently from Star Wars is just Visions. So the next Vision stuff, I'm like dying for.
Ooh, yeah, that's so. Some good stuff too.
Yeah, that's man, probably
that first episode of season 2 was so good.
Yeah, just any of that stuff, like just being an animation fan, let alone anime fan, like just any time there's like we're like pushing the boundaries for like what Star Wars can look like, I'm just always about. So when I watched the first Visions run, like my mind just totally like melted out of my ears. And that first I think it's the first episode where it's like the kind of feudal Japan style samurai kind of Kurosawa vibe. Like I was like, oh, this is happening right now. This is everything. Okay, cool. I'm locked in. Well, I'm gonna watch this 4 times in a row right now, you know. So
got back to the roots of, I mean, what inspired Lucas with the original films is Kurosawa. I mean, I love that. Visions is awesome. It's extremely underrated.
And it like
what's all about, man.
It, yeah, like you say, it goes back to the original Kurosawa, like, inspiration. It also taps into such, like, a huge part of the world that loves Star Wars. Celebration is obviously going back to Japan, which is pretty sweet. But then, like, you get so many sweet collectibles, too, out of that hemisphere of the world, too. Like, there is so much love for Star Wars in that hemisphere of the world that I think is underappreciated by the Western Hemisphere. So I think it's pretty awesome that they're getting like some visual love in on screen finally, like specifically curated to their culture. I think it's a beautiful thing.
And you know, I literally just thought of this question while we were doing this episode, so I just have to throw this out there. It is Star Wars related, and it kind of harkens back to all your previous work, Alec. Do you have a favorite Star Wars sound?
Ooh, man. as a sound guy, it's so like, right. It's so like it like in the osmosis of just sound, right? It's so hard to pick one.
Oh, I'm sure, because there's so many like amazing ones.
It's so yeah, again, like they're all really cool, I think. But I love like I wouldn't be able to tell you right off the top of my head which one it is, because also the thing about, at least I've noticed, is some of the sounds kind of like make their ways into other things. You know, of course there's like hero sounds, like a TIE fighter only ever sounds like a TIE fighter, you know, but like some of those really kind of more unique blaster tones like stick in my head, like, you know, the ones that aren't just that kind of regular, like a lot of times it's the, and I think if I'm the sound I'm thinking of, it's used for like the, like some of the like more like industrial large cannon stuff, you know, like more like the, what would it be, like the destroyer, you know, the big cannons or whatever. But like,
yep,
some of those things I just like are total earworms, you know. I go like, how do they make that? So I always get super excited for those sounds. And then I just totally love the sounds when lightsabers hit each other. I have no idea how they made those, but they're totally iconic and crazy sounding to me.
They built a lightsaber. That's how they did
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
You know?
Right. I mean, they have the one and only one, and they recorded it.
Right. They went up to the microphone and, you know, just did this.
Yes.
You know, exactly. Exactly. That is exactly what they did.
I can't even tell you what that sound is. I have no idea. It's like old school. You know, also how they made some of those sounds with like the devices they had back then just make it so much cooler, because like, you know, what is it, like the lore for the lightsabers, like they recorded like they moved a microphone around a TV, I think, like a
yeah,
TV.
Something like that. Because I know the blasters, like, was the electrical wires, right? Like he kind of tapped the wires or something, and that.
Yep.
That yeah, made, like that kind of cable snap kind of.
Yeah. That kind of thing. Yeah, I was gonna say that wasn't a lightsaber. No, I knew that.
Yeah, and so like, look what they had to do that. So,
well, yeah, like can you imagine doing that like back then? Like, that's crazy. Like, you know, now you've got, I feel like you have so many more kind of tools to work with, you know.
Yeah, and I think I'm really lucky to work with like some veteran guys, and work with like my dad, who's like, I've done a lot of work with him, who's like really, really like understands the craft. And he came up under, you know, not those guys specifically, but like a lot of those really kind of like gnarly dudes who were just like taking microphones and just recording shit on tape, you know, on mag, and just having to make it work. And like, yeah, really, they could add some echo or some reverb or some distortion, and then they could pitch it up and slow it down, and that's kind of all they could do back then. Like, and so one of the things I stand out to me, this is like off topic, but my dad and I tried to figure out, like, you know, the sound of like which you guys, and I believe it's originally from Flipper, but we'll recognize it from like the dolphin sound from SpongeBob, and like, you know, it's like that, like, kind of sound. And we were like, what is that? Like, we wouldn't be able to tell you. So we were like, he knew, I believe it was from Flipper. He's like, so it's going to be older. And that's kind of when I learned some of those kind of like tips. Like, yeah, something's older. Like, they were more limited in what they could have done back then. So there's probably a good chance that that's like the sound of an animal that they like sped up and like did stuff to. And that kind of harkens back to what they were doing on Star Wars. Like, I believe the TIE fighter is like a stretched out elephant scream.
Really? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. It's like, I'm pretty sure that it's like they, you know, have like that kind of like classic elephant sound. And it might not be an elephant. Maybe it's like, you know, a lot of times like seals and other kind of big, crazy sounding animals get recorded. But I believe it might be that. And I think the basis, and I say it's that, it's definitely not. There's a lot of like design process that goes into it. But I think the layman's idea of what it is, I believe its base was like just the sound of an elephant being stretched out. And then they distorted it and did cool things to it. But like, that's what they had to do back then. So I feel like there's a pretty big difference too, a lot of times, with like modern sounds versus, you know, older stuff. Is just on principle, like, we might reach for things to do it easier, but, you know, then you kind of create some minutiae by doing that, because there's a little bit less individuality from it.
Absolutely. Man, Alec, this has been a pleasure getting to talk with you and David 100%. And Matt, and pick your brain about
filmmaking and Star Wars. Is there anything you want to plug or you want to talk about before we wrap up?
I don't think I really have anything to plug. I think if I was going to plug anything, I'd just say, just keep going to the movies, man. Like, and support, you know, the writers and the actors and all those guys who are out there, you know, like in the, you know, it's like, I think it's like over 100 degrees where I'm living at right now. So they're braving these, the heat, and they're fighting for things that are really important, you know? So like, you know, this is the guy who knows those people. This isn't the article you're reading online telling you guys that what they're fighting for is really important. So just let's keep the positive, you know, the positivity and the love for those guys out there right now, because they need it. And if you want to get into sound, don't listen to anybody online. Just go start recording stuff.
That sounds legit. That's awesome.
I think it's important to remember, too, to not forget everybody like you, too, that contributes so much to the movies that we love.
Amen.
You know, there's so many aspects that no one ever thinks about. So even with these strikes, you know, they're super crazy important, but the strikes affect you. And we should remember and think about the work that you guys do for these, you know, beloved properties that we all love and enjoy. So thank you for what you do too.
Hey, thank those guys, man. They're fighting for a longer, like they're fighting for a lunch break. You know, the last time they got and that revised it all was like in the 60s. Like, I'm not kidding. So like, you know, the better they get treated, the better the movies will be, contrary to what the studio heads want you to believe. You know,
right.
So.
Yeah. The crazy thing is I'm sure zero of the public has ever read through one of their contracts. So no. I'm sure their contracts, if their contracts haven't been updated since the 60s, I'm sure they're pretty archaic, you know, like it. So I'm sure they need a lot of updating. I'm sure they do.
Yeah. They've gotten renegotiations over the years, but that's just a mind blowing thing to me, is that like, that hasn't been changed since then. There's been changes throughout, you know, time, but like, I feel like lunch breaks are pretty base level important to have figured out. So that's my two cents on that, without getting too political on this now, because we're in a positive Star Wars podcast. So,
well, exactly. Yeah. And Alec, it has been an honor having you on. Thank you so much for joining us. And you are welcome back anytime, buddy.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you're welcome. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of Jawa Jabber. We've got more exciting content coming your way in the next couple of weeks. And then, of course, again, we're leading up to the Ahsoka premiere on August 23rd on Disney+. So for our special guest star, Alec, Kenobi, Matt the Radar Technician, Dennis the Phantom Menace, I am David Wren. Thank you very much for listening, and may the Force be with you always.
And for my brothers on here, I'll say, this is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
You gotta say it too, Alec.
This is the way.
There we Hell go. Yeah. All right.
You are my brother now.
You are. You are part of the Sandcrawler. Yes, you are.
Let's go.